Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
McNeil's latest free kick and Branthwaite's header. McAllister, Tarkowski, Harrison, Godfrey, McAllister shanked in, Branthwaite off the post and in. Everton in front. Massive celebrations at Goodison Park. Jarrod Branthwaite with the decisive touch. McNeil with his corner kick. And Calvert-Lewin! 2-0 Everton, who are striding towards safety and maybe knocking Liverpool out of the race for the Premier League title. It is Dominic Calvert-Lewin in front of the Gladys Street. And for Everton, it can get no better than this. It's a mighty leap from Everton's number nine. Luis Diaz header, Mohamed Salah pushed away by Pickford. One last moment of glory for the Everton goalkeeper. They're just waiting for the whistle. The 244th Merseyside derby is season defining for Everton. Everton 2, Liverpool 0.
Tricky game against top opposition, we know that. But to give the people that, I think it's pleasing for all of us. You know what it's like, the news changes quickly. A few weeks ago, people were saying, do they care? They care. We care. There's no two ways about that. And I think we've made that clear as a collective.
If you can win your duels in the boxes, it stands you in good stead. And I think tonight we did that. And second balls in the middle of the pitch as well. And just digging deep, we allowed them to have possession, but we never feared that they were going to really hurt us. And I think as players, you can feel that on the pitch. And that was the most important thing, just the work rate and the endeavour, which then got us the result tonight.
What a night at Goodison Park. Everton ended 13 and a half years of pain by beating Liverpool at home, thereby taking another huge stride towards preserving their Premier League status. We shall not be moved, Dick Masters, and possibly torpedoing Jurgen Klopp's dream of signing off as the Reds manager with silverware. It was a result, a performance to savour under the lights as the Toffees executed Sean Dyche's game plan to perfection, bringing the requisite intensity and fight to triumph 2-0 behind goals from Jared Branthwaite and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. How are we, Blues? As if we couldn't guess. Welcome to the Toffee Web podcast, coming to you from Cloud 9 up in the royal blue heavens as we bask in the warm glow of a rare but chest-thumping derby win. Paul, a point would have done, but why take one when you can grab all three, eh? Take us back to the grand old lady for that one. It was a game that will live long in the memory, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. It feels like one of them sort of maybe the last of the great nights at Goodison Park, perhaps. We're going to do well to top that in the next year, I guess, aren't we? Unless something mad happens and, we get to, imagine, how could you top that? Beat them in the FA Cup quarter-final at Goodison or something like that? You talk about something like that, aren't you? If that means winning the Cup. It's got to be something as spectacular as that. It was wonderful. It was a bit of a throwback of a derby, I thought. I don't think we really had a derby like that and played in that way in a derby, probably since David Moyes was there, really, I think. The game plan has been a lot about sort of being disciplined, being stuck in, working on spotting weaknesses, working on them, exploiting them, just being disciplined the whole game. They were just incredible. All of them were so proud of them. But I can't vouch for everybody, but you couldn't, and you're probably the same as me, I imagine you too, but you couldn't even in 93rd minute or so, I still just couldn't quite.
Yeah.
It was like, you just couldn't believe it was going to happen until people started singing F off to Norway, the city's all ours, and people started singing, you've effed it up, you've effed up Klopp, whatever the song was, and I'm thinking, not yet, guys, not yet. it wasn't premature, thankfully. It was just brilliant, brilliant occasion to be at, and a lot of sore heads, I imagine this morning. Just incredible. So proud of the boys. It's quite hard to put into words. I remember walking. I was actually in the office in Bolton, so I drove and parked up near the pub pretty early. So met the other fellas, and we walked. As we walked up, about 7:15 or so, 7:20, it felt really quiet. It didn't really feel like it. As you got closer and outside the brick, it was all sort of a lot of gathering. As you got onto Goodison Road, it was it started to feel like it. And you got inside and into the concourse, and everyone's bouncing by that point. So, but just walking towards it, I didn't feel like a derby. I remember thinking, well, I'm not that optimistic here. It could be an opportunity, I suppose. It's a little bit of a free hit, but I think because we'd beaten Forest, that you felt so much more relaxed going into that game. Had we lost to Forest, it would have been on a knife edge, really. But obviously, the atmosphere just took off big time once you were there, and just incredible. Just I'm really so proud of the boys, and not much more to add, really.
Very jealous, I've got to say. But in all honesty, I said last night to you guys, you could feel that atmosphere through the screen, and I think a big part of that was exactly what we kept saying we wanted, which is the players to give the fans something to feed off. And from minute one, yes, we rode our luck at times, and yes, they created some chances, but we were so strong. We completely deserved to win. This wasn't scraping by. This wasn't completely backs to the wall. The possession stats might suggest that, and as I say, Pickford made some fantastic saves and they had chances, but we completely deserved it. We outfought them, we outplayed them, and that gave the fans the lift. It wasn't the case that it's been over the last couple of seasons where the fans have had to, at times, drag the players kicking and screaming over the line. It was equilibrium, wasn't it? It was two sides working together. The fans in the stands and the players on the pitch, and to get one over on them this year, and probably the last couple of seasons really, but this one in particular, it's been so painful. But I've almost lost a bit of that rivalry. I've kind of forgotten about it a bit, and yeah, part of that is down to our position to the table, isn't it? Because we're no longer thinking, oh, well, we're, I don't know, challenging for a European place and so are Liverpool, or we feel in any way kind of on their level. We haven't. And to get one over on them at this critical juncture, it just flies in the face of what is the typical narrative in this game, which is us snatching defeat from, you know, from victory, you know, in some way. And you're right, Paul, at the end, I was, until the whistle went, I was just a bundle of pure tension, just like just a coiled spring, expecting something horrible to happen. I couldn't relax, and I was watching the game with my brother-in-law, and he was just like, only you as an Everton fan would have your head in your hands 2-0 up when, you know, the ball's gone out of play for a throw-in on the halfway line. And I was like, yeah, but experience tells me something horrible is going to happen. You know, something's bound to go wrong here. And it's only now that I can kind of, yeah, reflect on it in a kind of opposite way to probably how Andy felt after the Chelsea game, where at times the adrenaline just took me by. But what a night. What a way to, yes, not mathematically secure our safety. And we certainly don't want to get caught up and complacent there. And I'm sure that's been the message from Dyche today. I saw his press conference, and that seems to be the order of the day, which is what you'd expect. But what a lift. And that, particularly that second goal, just like Dwight McNeil's on Sunday against Forest, I spoke about the fact we've been starved of moments at Goodison Park. It doesn't get any better than that, does it? That's the epitome of a Gladys Street moment. And I'm so chuffed for all the players, and particularly the man of the match, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, because he's really had to ride through the storm as well. So for him to be so so pivotal, in that game, it's just, yeah, just brilliant.
For me, if I was told to write down my perfect Everton match day or my perfect Everton game, I think it would be near enough that. So the elements I'd go for would be Goodison under the lights against them, beating them, guts, fight, heart, Goodison being that cauldron where it must be horrible if you're the away team, but brilliant if you're the home team. Vibrancy, colour, all of those things. And then you'd have a young player making his way in the game, having such an influence on it, like Jarrod Branthwaite did. You'd have almost a bit of a scrappy goal that you can kind of feel coming. And then you probably would have the Everton number nine, who's this tall striker, popping up at the back post of the Gladys Street at the end of it. And yeah, and that might feel like, for 90% of us watching Everton, that image, that kind of that drama going on in your mind's eye, that might feel like a bit of a pipe dream, really. I mean, how often does that actually happen? And last night it did. And it was, when you boil it all down, when we watch this thing every week and we get tied up in it, and, you know, we go through the mill with it. Really, last night, it's all I want, really. Yes, you see these teams that have 70, 80% of the ball, and they pass teams to death, and they've got great technical players, and, you know, we've kind of gone through our version of that, which obviously wasn't a top end version of it. But I don't know, there's something magic about a team at Goodison playing on the front foot and playing direct and getting in opposition faces. And I mean direct in the best possible way, in the most positive way you can imagine direct football.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't perfect, and sometimes in the final third again, I thought, oh my word, come on. But, you know, you're playing against a good side, who weren't at their best, but you're playing against a good side. And I just thought, I mean, it was just everything I want Everton to be, really. And I am massively jealous of Paul for being there. I mean, I was at the last one. I realised that actually when they were talking about it in commentary, I'd actually seen the last home win when Arteta and Cahill scored. Yeah, and to think it's been that long where we haven't had a night like that. And I'm also pleased for Goodison itself. You know, we've got, what, hopefully 20-odd games there left, probably. 25 at a push, depending on how you get on in the cups. And it looks like it's going to be in the top flight now, which is amazing. And, you know, how, like I've just said, how many of those 20-odd games are going to look and feel like that? You know, it's unlikely that many of them will. But it's had that night, and it had that magic about it. And I sat there and just, you know, by the start of the game, I was actually quite relaxed for a derby. And I think that's because we beat Forest. And we'd beaten Burnley. You know, we'd got the mucky jobs done, hadn't we?
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And this was kind of like, well, come on, let's give it a go, see what happens. And I sat there and I just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a good game of football. I mean, I know it's hard to see that sometimes from in a derby, isn't it? It's hard to kind of, you know, take yourself a step back. But actually, it was a decent match of football as well, and it just had everything, and I'll remember that one for some time.
Yeah, John Champion on the commentary said it a couple of times. He said this is a really good game of football, and it was. You know, it wasn't because sometimes the derbies can be very ugly and very fractious, and you know, I mean, hats off to Andy Madley. It's very, very rare that I will praise a referee, but and I think he Liverpool argued that he was a bit lenient on us, and I think at times he might have been, at other times I don't think he was. I think there were quite a few challenges that we could have got that we didn't get later in the game. From a neutral's perspective, it was just a really good game. And as you said, it's so nice. And I think it was really important for Goodison to get at least one more night like that against Liverpool under the lights, as you say. Because I think this one was originally scheduled for the 16th of March, which would have made it an afternoon game, possibly, you know, either a lunchtime or a late afternoon kickoff. It wouldn't have been under the lights. And so, you know, it's just that kind of quirk of fate that their involvement in the FA Cup meant that we got this occasion, you know, as I say, under the lights. And I think given the circumstances between the two clubs find themselves in, this was the perfect game, how you would imagine it. You know, I think we all in our perfect vision would like us to go toe-to-toe with Liverpool and be able to pass them off the park and all the rest of it. But we don't. We can't do that. We don't have the players that they do, and we know that. And so, as I say, given the circumstances that we find ourselves in, the misery that this club has put us through for the last few years, and particularly the last few months, it was just... Yeah, I was envious of Paul being there, but just being able to, you know, just to kind of just almost drink it in through the screen, it was just magnificent. And I'd had a funny feeling about it going off the back of what I'd said on the previous pod, which about after the Forest win and that sort of injecting a bit of confidence and self belief back into the players, because as we know, confidence and self-belief, you know, you can accomplish great things just by having a bit of just having a go. And we did it, but I just couldn't bring myself to verbalize it because, you know, again, because derbies have been so painful for so long, and it just didn't feel, I don't know, just didn't feel brave enough to put it out there that, hey, we could actually do something tonight. But I just had this funny feeling. But then it's always the hope, isn't it, that potential that lies in every match, no matter how big the disparity between the two teams in terms of quality, that we could pull off a win. And we've been disappointed so many times, but then they just do this, and it just reminds you of what we're in this for. You know, you put up with all the misery just for nights like that. But one question I'll ask Adam and Paul as well is that most of the memorable derbies get a name. You know, like the Cahill Derby or the Carsley Derby or the, you know, or for them, the, you know, the Pickford Derby. What do you think this one will come to be known as?
God, that's a great question.
Because it would feel a little bit, it would feel a little bit too sort of narrow to call it Calvert-Lewin derby, because I know he got the second goal.
Yeah.
And he was very much involved in the first, but I think it wouldn't do justice to the other players if you called it that.
The redemption derby? I don't know. But then that's not focusing on anybody in particular, and that's not kind of, that doesn't tell the tale. I mean, you could call it the Klopp derby, but then that focuses too much on him. You know,
John Champion called it the demolition derby, which is good.
That's good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to have to work on that one in my mind.
Yeah.
Because the reason for that is that there was nobody that stood out. Well, there were a few that stood out, okay, slightly above the rest.
Yes.
But it wasn't as if we had plenty playing at 6 and 7 out of 10 and somebody just took the game by storm and did a 10. You know, right. It was, they were all at such a level. I mean, how many times was Tarkowski in the right place? How many times was Branthwaite in the right place?
They're brilliant.
And Pickford does what Pickford does. Ben Godfrey, if he hadn't have made that slide tackle at the near post in the you know, the first few minutes, very different evening. I think he came out of the game really well. I thought Garner was the right pick. I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight, but Garner was the right pick in midfield, James Garner, because of the energy he gave it. Garner Gay was faultless. I mean, you know, you do very well to see many holding midfield performances better than that, really. I thought the two wide men, they did everything you'd want, you know, everything you'd ask of them, really. They didn't quite have that clinical moment between them. But then, you know, McNeil pops up with the corner. I mean, Calvert-Lewin, that was as good as I can ever remember him playing, I think. I mean, he went through that spell under Carlo, didn't he, where he was in a flow in front of goal. But
yeah,
for an all-round performance, you know, you'd put him up against those two lumps and think he's going to have a hard night. but he made them look like schoolboys. I thought he was absolutely terrific. And
With a strapped up knee.
I mean, you could call it the throwback derby because it had real kind of cut and thrust and it was great. It was, but no, in terms of an actual name, I mean, wow. I've missed out Abdoulaye Doucouré. I've missed out Doucouré, who was brilliant as well. You know,
yeah.
And Mikalenko carried on with one leg for a bit. I mean, you know, everybody played their part. Ashley Young came on, and Mo Salah didn't touch the ball in the second half.
No, it's very true.
It was just, you know, I could go on and on and on. And
I was going to say while you were talking, I was just thinking, depending on how long he lasts, it might end up in the, you know, in further down the road being known as the Sean Dyche derby, and what, you know, what he, his first Goodison derby, and he gets a win, and let's say he doesn't get another one, and we, you know, we ditch him after another few months or a year, that could be his kind of lasting, that, and obviously keeping us up for two seasons would be his legacy.
Yeah. The tracksuit derby.
The tracksuit derby. Yes. Very nice.
I'm off to order mine in a moment. I've been drinking it in as well today. You can't watch enough of it, really. You can't read enough of it. I was listening to Gary Neville on the podcast afterwards saying what he thought of Goodison. I've been listening to Wayne Rooney talking. All the content, isn't it? You can't get enough of it, really. And you're right. Beforehand, I didn't dread it, and I've dreaded derbies, but there wasn't that dread for some reason. Maybe because they were just in a bit of a sensitive spot, and we were on, you know, maybe on the up. I don't know, but it just had. You know, I had that feeling. I must go over the transcript of the last podcast because I'm pretty sure I said in jest Everton 2, Liverpool 0. I didn't put any money on it. I've not got anything for that to show for it. But but no, I mean, yeah, it was excellent. I mean, I'm now going to the Brentford game and I'm thinking, how much of a Lord Mayor after the Lord Mayor show is this going to be? But I almost don't care. They've kind of earned they've almost earned a kind of, you know, a really dodgy one now, because we look so strong in that league table from where we were.
Yeah. Beauty of it was that it was so unexpected, you know, not least because it was only 10 days ago that we lost 6-0 at Chelsea. And I don't think we could be blamed in those circumstances for dreading facing that Liverpool forward line, given what was at stake for them. You know, the longer time stretches on with these derby records getting more and more depressing, the more they felt almost insurmountable. Like the results are baked in before kickoff. I mean, at Anfield, so often it's been defeat, while at Goodison it's been hard-fought, creditable draw. That's kind of the victory we've been able to eke out. It's just not losing. And we said last time that we would have taken a point last night before a ball was kicked, but you know, the players just refused to settle for a draw. And you know, as we've said, it felt like a proper 90s Dogs of War derby, complete, you know, as we said, with a corner from the right and a towering header from the centre forward. I mean, the players were magnificent to a man. And to give him credit where it's due again, Dyche set them up in the perfect way. And our team's been better. We've had better individual players since that last win in 2010. Obviously, 2013 comes to mind when, you know, not winning that game when Lukaku put us 3-2 up. Was it 82nd minute or something? I mean, that was agonizing. But I've not seen a derby performance with that much grit, determination and intensity, maybe since the pandemic version under Ancelotti at Goodison. But this was a more complete display, you know, a game plan that was perfectly executed. And of course, we won this one, whereas we only drew that one 2-2. You know, so as I said, we know we're the inferior team, which is why we have to rely on passion, the graft, the hard yards, as Dyche used to say, likes to say. You know, fighting those midfield battles, dominating at set pieces. I mean, Virgil van Dijk admitted afterwards that we outfought them, and we did. And we spoke on the last part about how the set piece goals had dried up, but they returned at the perfect moment of help, it should be said, by Liverpool's defence, which, I mean, they just couldn't handle us from dead ball situations. I mean, that second goal, that's supposed to be a potentially title-winning defence. And, you know, as Klopp bemoaned afterwards, McNeil put that corner where we put all our corners, and yet they only had Alexander-Arnold there, kind of, you know, just watching ghosts at the back post. I know that you know, Tarkowski does an excellent job of getting in the way of Van Dijk, so he can't get to it. But I mean, it was just glorious. You know, 2-0, clean sheet, 3 points, Premier League safety virtually guaranteed. What more can you ask for, eh?
Not a lot, really. It's the shopping list of things to come out of a derby. That pretty much tops it, doesn't it, I suppose? Yeah, just wonderful. Jordan Pickford is obviously a special mention. So you said Dominic Calvert-Lewin man of the match. Was that the actual official Sky man of the match? Or
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I could give 11 men of a match. But yeah, I think the official one was Dom, yeah.
Yeah, on the interview at the end, Jordan Pickford, I think, gave him the Man of the Match champagne or whatever it is, trophy, whatever.
Yeah, that kind of poster tube thing they give now. Yeah. I don't even know what it is.
But he had to hand that over quite begrudgingly, because I bet he would have thought he was in for a shout for it himself. But I'd actually agree. Yeah. I'd actually agree with that decision of Dominic being the Man of the Match. He was awesome last night, Dominic. And I'm really, as you said, I'm really, really pleased for him. I think we were saying the other week, well, you know, we thought, oh, no point risking him. You know, I think that was the what we were talking about last week. You know, unlikely to get a lot from the game anyway. Save him for Brentford. If he's only 50-50, don't play him. I'm glad he went ahead. And it probably says a lot about Dominic's determination to make himself available for that game. I imagine this talk, he had a stomach bug, didn't he, as well? And he was a bit poorly. And yeah. Obviously, he was only really 50-50 anyway. So, he must have really pushed himself to be involved. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. Nice to see him have his leap back again. He got up so well so many times, won so many headers, and feels like a good, probably even since COVID, really, since we've seen him, you know, jump that high and feel that fit about his, you know, he just seems so much more comfortable in his first time. I think that's the first time we've really seen him, you know, that comfortable and that, you know, he's ready to go bruising into a Merseyside derby like that. Let's hope he can just, you know, let's not be premature, but let's really hope that his injury troubles are well and truly behind, because he showed last night what a really magnificent player he can be on his day, Dominic. And he can be such a good player. So I'm happy for him, and nearly all the players really did. You know, that They all deserve a special mention. Even Ashley Young coming on. I think that I haven't seen the Mykolenko injury yet. I've heard it looks very sore, though, the way you fought, the way you fell. That's what my wife was saying. And she couldn't believe he came back onto the pitch to finish the half then. When we saw Ashley Young warming up at half-time, I thought, well, he's going to be up against Salah there. And I was saying to me, when I finally got back, driving back, and obviously a road was closed. I think Liverpool FC must have been doing the road closures that night. And it took quite a long time to finally get back. Finally got back, and me and my mate went up to the pub, and we were chatting about Young. And so, like, just, I don't know how much you see it on TV and that, but like in the game particularly, you can't buy that experience sometimes, I guess. He's just got that nous, and I know it's been question marks about Ashley throughout the whole season, but just the little things, knowing when to back into a player, knowing when to do a foul, knowing when to stand off, knowing, you know what I mean? Just can't buy that experience, really, knowing when to press, just had that habit of being in the right place a lot of the time yesterday, and that's just stuff you can't really buy, I guess. And yeah, I could go on all day about various different performances throughout the whole game. No, it was nervy at times, though, wasn't it? It was so, like, the last 6 minutes before half-time were just, and, you know, the injury time, that was just unbearable. It felt like they were cutting through us far too easily at that point. And I just thought it was never going to end. And every time you look at the clock, I was like, how are there still 4 minutes of this left? How are there still 3 minutes, 45 seconds of it? It was just like, and then we'd give the ball away a few times. It was just crucifying. And then another period between 60 and 70 minutes. I must have looked at that clock. So I've never seen a clock tick towards 70 minutes so slowly. So much happened in that time. I was just like, if I look at that, it was all like 69 and 30. And it was like, okay, right, you know, that, you know, nearly there now. And then it felt like they had about four chances. Looked at it again. It's like, it's still 15 seconds till 70 minutes. So it was just stuff like that. It was... But yeah, I could just go on and on, really. It was just such an incredible, incredible night, and yeah, just amazing, really.
Yeah, it says a lot about how well we played, though, that we rode out those moments, and it got to a point where there wasn't that really late onslaught. I know Harvey Elliott had a few chances from distance, which Pickford saved, but there wasn't a real kind of backs of a wall in that like kind of last couple of minutes. It felt like Liverpool was spent. It felt like they felt like they couldn't get through. It was at times the kind of backs to the wall defending that I kind of been expected us to maybe show a little bit of in this kind of running. And yeah, at times it was nervy. Certainly when like Diaz went through and hit the post, and as you say, Paul, that spell just before half time where you thought we need to get to half time. You mentioned Mykolenko as well, and yeah, on television at first they said we're not going to show it, it's that bad, and then they did, and you can see how Fire rolls his ankle, and
yeah, it goes 90 degrees.
Yeah.
His ankle rolled 90 degrees.
It's ugly, and the fact that he, and I'm sure a lot of it was adrenaline, but the fact that, as you say, he got through to half time, I think that just typified that dogs of war performance, and yeah, the same with Dom, the fact that as well as not being fully fit, he had a stomach bug, and yet he was unplayable. He was absolutely the striker who was once seen as, you know, only really number two to Harry Kane in terms of starting for the national side. He was absolutely brilliant. He just dominated their back line, as you say, Paul. His leap was back. And for him to get that goal, obviously it was nearly two, in the way he kind of stole in on the line, which I thought was great as well. And set pieces as well. Maybe I should talk in the third person more, but I don't know. Adam likes what he sees. The fact that, yeah, Gomez out the side meant McNeil was back on them, and, you know, I hate to say, I called that one. It was fantastic, and every set piece we looked dangerous from.
Well, except Ashley Young's at the end there.
Except Ashley Young's free kick,
which was yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I was just about to say some nice things about Ashley Young kind of following on from Paul, and it's just reminded me how I completely lost it that moment. Dear, oh dear, that was bad. But other than that, you're absolutely right, Paul. He did do all the things that we kind of, I've definitely used Ashley Young as a punchline a lot this season, and of course he has been frustrating, particularly when he's played further forward. But in terms of coming on in a game of that magnitude and showing, as you say, all of those years of experience, winning cheap fouls in his own area, just frustrating the opposition, doing all those kind of little knowing wink things that a pro of 20 plus years of playing will have in their locker. That's what I thought we were getting, someone who would come on and do a 45-minute cameo or less and use that experience. And he did that to great effect. So full credit to him. And again, we could probably do a whole podcast on multiple players. Branthwaite, again, a goal, but also another towering performance, keeping that forward line quiet. I thought Idrissa Garner-Gay, who also wasn't fit, soldiering on, was unbelievable. Maybe a couple of times where he sort of tried to overplay it when he could have cleared the ball, but he was magnificent. Absolutely. He just seemed to pop up out of everywhere. It was a classic Idrissa Garner-Gay performance. And I thought the wingers as well, Harrison's another player who we've been critical of, and he worked his socks off. He absolutely worked his socks off and showed some moments of quality. So to a man, they were excellent. And as you mentioned, Lyndon, we've been critical of Dyche at times, but he completely read the game. He read the occasion. I thought his substitutes worked well, albeit some of them were enforced. And it just a complete Derby performance. And it didn't even knock me after the game that they just spent so long talking about Liverpool and, you know, how they've had, you know, more games than anyone else. And, you know, isn't it a shame? And, you know, Daniel Sturridge has got a bad fleece on, so let's hear what he's got to say about it. I didn't care because I just thought this is even better, because I'd kind of forgotten about how much I hate them, because I've been so despairing at our situation and where I see things. I mean, it just reminded me in the best possible way. So that really was the cherry on top. An excellent night all round.
The way we started the game was fantastic, though, wasn't it? Straight on the front foot from the start, and I had this vision that we'd just, you know, sit in a bit, you know what I mean, and that, you know, maybe even let them have the ball a bit, you know what I mean, and just, you know, sit in and try and counter. But we took the game to them, which was a bit of a surprise to me. And like you say, the set pieces were excellent. The deliveries from MacDale all night were really, really good, really on point. Can you call that first one a set piece? I mean, I was amazed when I finally saw that. Because obviously, in the stadium, you don't know what they're checking for the offside. And where in the Gladys Street, so we had no idea where Dominic was starting his run from. My horror story at that point was Dominic touched it in on the line when he's ran from an offside position and touched it in. That's what we were thinking. We didn't know. Because so much happened, but I don't think they should be calling it back to look at the original free kick. And because there was so many phases of play between then, it was just imagine they disallowed the goal because from the original free kick, Van Vliet's, like, you know, left boot was slightly offside or something like that. That would have been absolutely insane, wouldn't it?
Well, they did in the Wolves game, didn't they, last night as well? I don't know if you saw that, the foul and the build up to their potential equaliser. I think like Cunha or someone puts an arm across, and it's very soft, but it happens in a much earlier phase of play. And I know, again, it's that distinction, isn't it, between being in the stands and going, what the hell's going on? But then also being at home on the sofa going, or in the pub or whatever, and going, well, I can see what they're doing, but I still don't know what's going on. Because you could see him at that initial phase. Yeah, it's quite early on, and you thought, oh God, he might be off here. But then they start scrubbing through the footage, just looking for anything. It's like an archaeologist digging for a ruin, and you're like, oh no, they're gonna find it. They're gonna find a reason not to allow this goal to happen, because it really did seem to go on forever. But yeah, I agree. It's not necessarily a set piece goal, is it? It's that kind of second phase, and then pretty calamitous defending from
them. Yeah, it was awful. I thought Trent Alexander-Arnold, I thought largely the relatively good game, actually. And I think he's a fantastic player, actually. I think he's come on leaps and bounds this season, particularly. But anyway, what am I doing facing Liverpool players? But I thought his defending for both goals was really...
It's nice to be a bit kind of aloof about it, though, isn't it? You know,
he's
got a lot of talent. He's got a good future in the game, I think. You know, he's no Ashley Young, but, you know... You know.
Pat on the head.
Yeah, Pat on the head. Yeah. I was going to go for the head rub, but anyway. Yeah, but his defending for both goals was very poor. I mean, it was a really bad effort for that header at the edge of the box. For that was, and I don't know what he's doing for the second one, just to pick on one player particularly. But yeah, it was so bad, the defending for the first goal. It's just like, we'll just keep clearing it to you until you finally pull it in. And maybe even Alisson probably should have saved Brantford's one, really, or might, you know, I bet Pickford would be getting question marks had that have gone in against. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, obviously we'll take it. But yeah, it was a really, really strange goal, wasn't it? Yeah, but where was it going with that? I'm not sure. Like, set pieces, was that where it was? I'm not sure. My head's everywhere here, to be honest. Right. I don't even know where. I'm just, like you say, I'm still buzzing, quite honestly, from, like, you know,
Me too, over a day on.
It's hard to put all this into words, which probably ain't great podcast material, but I'm still buzzing from the whole thing yesterday. You can tell it's been so long since we won the derby, or seen us win the derby. You know what I mean? And you forget what it feels like, almost, to be honest. And you're just kind of so done with, I think you said before, Adam, of just almost expecting to lose or not really feeling you got any sort of hope of winning. You know what I mean? And I didn't think, again, I didn't really give us much of a chance going into the game, and just to come out and just to see us play like that. It's just makes you so proud. And it seems like we come back to Goodison Park almost every podcast now, as the, you know, the stadium moves, I guess, gets closer and closer. And it's moments like that you're really going to miss. Yeah, it's just such a beautiful thing, Goodison Park. And it's never going to feel the same, is it? You know, it's just nights like that are just there to remember forever, really, aren't they?
And it's nice to have a game as well that it means something on so many levels. It means something every time you beat them, and as you say, when it's been so long, it takes on obviously more meaning as a result. But the fact that it's at the business end of the season, we've come to look at games like, oh yeah, we've got Bournemouth, that's our big game, and it's not the same, is it, really? Obviously it means something in the context of a table, but to take something away from someone as well while you're gaining something, that's something we've just not had over the last couple of seasons.
From them too.
from them, yeah.
It's just delicious.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's it really does add something extra to it, and as you say, like under the lights, just already that second goal is just burned into the back of my skull. It's just there, and it will stay there. And I think, as you say, Paul, as we kind of count down the days, having a moment like that, amidst all this darkness, having that chink of light to look to, God, it's a bit deep, isn't it? But it's true. I was like, I keep looking back on it, and it's goosebumps every time. It means so much more to do it in that way. And again, in the context of a season, it's just huge, isn't it? It's absolutely huge. It means that we go into Saturday completely buoyant. Having this was the free hit. There was the two free hits, weren't there? There was Chelsea and there was this. One of them we obviously just failed the audition completely. But this, I mean, it's the one you'd want out of the two as well, isn't it? It really is a statement of intent. And one of the things that I picked up on that Dom said in the post-match interview, well, two things I liked that he said. One was where there was reference to the last time we beat them at Goodison and the Arteta goal. And he said, well, you know, Jared Branthwaite and myself got the goals today, and that's what counts, which I really liked. That was a confident answer from a player who's playing with confidence. And and the other thing that I remember he said was pressure is a privilege. And I think that atmosphere at Goodison, we've spoken about it so many times. Of course, it can be a pressure situation. And we spoke about the mentality of the players and the manager as well. And if you wanted a response to all that, just look at that performance. That has to be the marker. No more, oh, yeah, Brighton away. Do you remember that one, you know, blip on the radar where something kind of clicked into place? And you know, that's the marker of how to play on the occasion, to rise to it rather than feel overawed by it, as you say, Paul. Not to come out and sit back and, you know, try and absorb things and maybe sneak something. To do what we're good at, which is win set pieces, put them into a box, rattle them, press them, harry them, just make it as uncomfortable as possible. and with it, you'll feel the ground respond, literally. So that has to be now the benchmark of where we're at, and certainly for Deitch, that's his blueprint, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. That should be the baseline, and it's been missing for so much of the season. You know, that intensity has been missing for so much of the season. We started games well, as we well know, and not scored a goal or just not been able to follow it up, and then things just kind of drizzle out, and the crowd gets frustrated. We ended up, you know, either not winning or losing in a disappointing fashion. So to keep that up. And a lot of it comes from the crowd. You know, the players gave them something to get their teeth into early. We obviously have the penalty that wasn't. I think had we scored that, I think we might have gone a bit too soon. You know, that would have left an awful lot of time to soak up, you know, Liverpool pressure. So I think that the goal when it came was at the right time, and I agree that those few minutes before halftime they felt like second half stoppage time. It was weird. It felt like the final few minutes of a cup tie. It was just kind of non-stop traffic towards our goal. But we definitely needed the halftime break to reset and refocus. But I think that we had the bulk of the chances for the first quarter of an hour of the second half as well, which again was huge. Was to keep the intensity and the momentum in our favor. And obviously we get the second goal, which was, you know, well-deserved. I think, you know, a bit of luck at the end with Dwight McNeil's shot, which I think hits Robertson. If Robertson's not standing there, then it's 3-0. And that would have been heady times if we'd scored a third.
There was other late chances too. Branthwaite headed one wide. There was that one there. Jack Harrison at the back post. I mean, not the tallest. Maybe even a bit harsh. And there's quite a few, wasn't there? When the ball nearly went somewhere, and it could have been three on another day. It wouldn't have been unfair. And that would have been very, oh God, I don't even know what I'd be saying now. Still be pissed, but but yeah, that would have been incredible. Sorry, had to jump in there.
It just goes to show that there was nothing fortunate about that victory.
No,
you know, it wasn't lucky, as you said earlier, Adam. It wasn't just us scraping our way to a narrow victory. It was completely deserved. Liverpool will say they had their chances, but you know what? You didn't take them.
And to be fair, Liverpool aren't making excuses. Let's be fair. Klopp hasn't made excuses. Right. He hasn't. He has referenced that we missed a lot of chances, and that is true. But you know, he hasn't come out saying, "Oh, we were the better team." I mean, for that, actually, he had a bit of a go at his team, didn't he? For like the way they didn't defend well and all that. I think. And what is strange is because Liverpool, you know, still in the title race. Well, maybe not with City 3 up on 53 minutes at Brighton, but you know, you think like it just felt like Everton wanted it so much more, and again on the balance you'd find a bit more surprising because Liverpool had so much more to play for than Everton really in that game. Everton's still obviously survival. Very, very important. But again, we've all referenced like, well, you know, we could have sort of, you know, just take, you know, got through the game and then concentrate on Brentford. So just full marks to Deitch and the team and everybody for just giving it a good go, you know, giving it the best in that day when I think nearly everybody would have said, yeah, okay, if we have to lose that one, if it means beating Brentford, we take it. You know what I mean? And we go again against them next season, maybe. Even at half time, as defeatist as it sounds, we were kind of saying, I'd probably still take a draw, if I'm honest. You know what they're like. If they score a quick goal, you know what I mean? They could just turn it on and we could just be in a lot of trouble quite quickly. Even at 2-0, I'm thinking, it's a bloody long way to go. If they get the next goal, you know what it's like. You know what it's like against good teams, you got to be careful. So they protected that lead so, so well. The defenders, Branthwaite and Tark, obviously had a very good game.
Yeah.
Probably answer this critics a bit. Tark, obviously, because it's the Chelsea game. The last two matches, I thought. I think he's been much more.
He was excellent.
Yeah, much more excellent. And we haven't mentioned Ben Godfrey yet, I don't think. And again, it's always a question mark, let's be fair, especially at right back. You know, obviously that challenge in the first half was very, very important. But he was great, he was solid, and you know, just stuck to his game and did really, really well. So yeah, just fantastic. all of them. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he is the master of that kind of last ditch, last minute interception, isn't he? Godfrey, was it the Brentford away game? I think.
Fulham as well.
Challenge like that.
Fulham
as well.
Fulham. Yeah, he's making a bit of a trademark of it, isn't he?
And I think the fact as well that a lot was made of, oh yeah, how many games Liverpool played. The fact that we put in that kind of performance, that level, after playing on the Sunday as well in a massive, massive game, in a really tough game against Forest, and then with players out injured, you know, we spoke about Dom, Garner Gay, others who would have been feeling knocks, who had already put in a huge shift, to do that and find another gear. I've not really seen us go to that kind of level, but there've been times this season where our pressing's been good, but we forced them into mistakes. They weren't at the best. Yeah, you're right. But they didn't see it as the occasion. Maybe that we did, which is surprising where they are in the league. But we completely made them pay for it, and we forced them into those mistakes. I use the word rattled for Forrest in their response to the game on Sunday, but it was that kind of performance from Liverpool. But those mistakes at the back, and it could easily have been more. Pickford, made some fantastic saves. They were reaction stops, but they're the kind of saves that I think if one of the top goalie makes a save like that, everyone's talking about all weekend. That's the, oh, did you see that save at the weekend? Pickford makes three or four of those in the same game. And it kind of gets just sort of like, he's makes saves like, oh, but he's got a mistake in him, hasn't he? I think he completely answered any of that nonsense from, the Chelsea game. He makes a pretty high profile error, but he's not made too many this season. And again, as we've seen in other run-ins, he's the man when it counts. I think, the wingers full of energy, James Garner full of energy. I couldn't fault a single player. I thought they were all excellent. And it really does bode well for Brentford. I know they've started to find a little bit of form again. But if we can put anywhere near, if there's some nice little middle ground between how we played against Forest and how we played against them last night, then we will just blow them away. I realize I'm getting a bit too confident now, but I think it was that good a performance. If that's somewhere where we can get near again, then great. But to be honest, even if we don't, doesn't that table just look? I mean, it's still not great. It's 16th in the end of April. It's not where I'd like us to be, and it's not where we should be, is it? Based on points deductions, but in terms of that gap, bloody hell, it looks a hell of a lot better, doesn't it?
We should be 14th, right? Mm. Sitting above Palace.
Yeah, we'd be 14th with even half an eye on. Oh, might even get in top 10 here, is what we'd probably be looking at. You know, it's is that right? We'd be not. We'd be, I think I checked before.
41 points.
Four points behind Bournemouth.
4 points behind Bournemouth, yeah.
So that's probably what we'd be dreaming of now, I imagine, if we didn't have the points deduction, which, other teams may scoff at, but it'd be a pretty big thing for us, wouldn't it, to finish in the top half for the way the way last few seasons have gone. So that's why I've always sort of like. I don't know, I've been sympathetic with Dyche when it's come to the criticism. I kind of probably stood up for him. I think more than you guys have. I think it's
true. No.
I always liked him, Paul. I always said he's our man to lead us into a new stadium.
I just try to look at the bigger picture with him, really. And, I think he's last few results, he's probably turned a few people's, changed a few people's minds. I'd love us to sort of, finish the season strong, We should stay up and, imagine we could, win the next one, beat Luton, beat Sheffield United. Is that unfeasible now? You write off Arsenal early, imagine we won another three. That would just be brilliant, wouldn't it? be a really good high to finish the season with. Yeah, just looking at the teams, I mean, just talk about the like Matt against Liverpool played, etc. But they made six changes. Look at the team they still put out against us. You know what I mean? They made we obviously don't have that. This is the thing, that their squads, these bigger teams, the squads are so much bigger and better than ours. You know what I mean? It's the options they have, the younger players the bigger teams have, cherry picked from everywhere. The you know, they've got so many more options they can bring into it. And Jordan Pickford it'd be a bit farcical if he doesn't get in the team of the season. I think now, just the number of clean sheets he's had compared to, you know, he's right up there with everybody else. Well, that's all the other teams. You know, I think it's the other clean sheets of Arsenal, Liverpool, and City, I think, are the highest ones. And I'm surprised they're teams 1, 2, and 3 in the season. You know what I mean? In the league. So, yeah, and he must be standing out better than anybody else, surely. You know what will happen? He won't get it. They'll give it to the Arsenal, the City keeper, I imagine, just because he plays for City. But yeah, he should get it because he's been fantastic this season, Jordan.
That comment about the league table. If Luton lose at Wolves this weekend and we just pick up a point, goal difference alone means that we're effectively safe. So that's a very nice position to be in with 3 games left of the season. And going back to the conversation that we had, and when I was most critical of Sean Dyche 2 podcasts ago, I made the point that this team is better than the way they've been playing. And I think we showed that in abundance last night. If you play to our strengths, and yeah, and it wasn't, as I said before, it wasn't just a battering ram of a performance. We actually played some pretty good stuff at times. It's unfortunate that sometimes the final ball isn't quite there. It almost was for Jack Harrison, that for the penalty. That was a fantastic pass with the outside of his boot, and unfortunately Calvert-Lewin's offside. There's a couple of moments where Dwight McNeil could have put Calvert-Lewin away. Calvert-Lewin could have put Harrison away if he hadn't tried to chip the keeper from 50 yards.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's more talent in that team than they've been showing, and I think a lot more than Dyche has been allowing them to demonstrate at times. But you know, as I said on the last one, all we want from Dyche is for him to show tactical flexibility, to be able to manage a game, to be able to set the team up in the right way depending on the opposition. And I mean, as I said before, last night he did that to a T. So you know, if that's how it continues, then full credit to him, and he will be more than worthy of staying and getting, you know, and using this last year of his contract to prove that he's got what it takes to take us forward. You know, he said a couple of times, and he said it last night, he said, you know, I'd love to play beautiful football, but, you know, we have to cut our cloth accordingly. And yes, but there's going to come a time when we want to see some evidence that you're actually able to get the team to play better style of football. And he may not ever have the personnel to do that, given all the off-field stuff that we won't go into now, and the, you know, the financial constraints and all the rest of it. But I mean, this, yeah, again, last night just shows what the team's capable of and how we can play to our strengths.
It's interesting, my use of like beautiful football. It depends, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
It's true.
I think as Evertonians, we're not necessarily wanting that kind of, you know, let's just relentlessly recycle the ball,
right,
you know, and ball the opposition into submission. I don't think we want that. And Dyche could potentially do that, and he's shown in moments that brand of football is there, and that it does get that positive response. I think last night was the example of it. So it's maybe not just playing beautiful football, it's just plain football, because at times this season we've looked like we just don't want to do that. It's not been just negative, it's been players who just look like they've been told not to really use the ball or look after it. And last night, even though we didn't see too much possession, when we had it, we were far more effective with it. Players seemed to just have a bit more calmness, a bit of confidence, and could be as simple as the victory against Forest and the manner of it. McNeil, we've not spoken about a lot. Obviously, set piece delivery, great. But again, having shots from distance again and just having that bit of swagger in his step.
From a central position, it should be noted again, which was again that tactical flexibility from the Forest game, is the shot that he takes to win the corner for the second goal. He's closer to the right flank.
Closer to the right,
left.
Yeah, it's a good point, and yeah, I think you gave the assist last time, but yeah, El Bretland's been saying that, you know, all season.
And it doesn't mean deploying him behind the striker; it just means having that flexibility where he can come inside and drift inside, and Decore can switch places, and just giving the teams, because we've been so predictable for most of this season, you know. So it's if if that's where things are going, just a bit more flexibility in how we play, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, but think about like beautiful football as well. I mean, we were sick to death at that effort of beautiful football under Martinez by the end of it, weren't we? You know, I think you would be, yeah, so it was nice when it worked in that one season, you know, I mean, I guess we kind of had the players for that year, but once we found out, I don't think it really suits Evertonians, really. I don't know, you want that sort of mixture of sort of pressing and, you know, and verve and high-octane football.
Mixture.
Yeah. But
mixture is the word. Yeah, because the 80s team could pass. They really could, but they could be direct and they could get it forward quickly. And Sean Dyche has said, that's my idea of direct football. It's not necessarily hoofball. It's getting it forward quickly, getting on the front foot. And that's what Everton football is about.
Yeah, I guess the latter stages of David Moyes, I guess that, you know, that last team he had before he left is probably the as close as a blueprint to that as you're probably going to get in terms of real high tempo, good aggression. But they had some good quality players by that point, you know, but... I think we all have a good idea of what that looks like. Dyche is a pretty good fit for delivering that. I think, and I don't know, I'm not. It's one for the other day, isn't it? How long Dyche's legacy lasts at Everton. Yeah. I think he's certainly had the right to carry on longer, but I think he's never really had the opportunity to show us anybody if he's that sort of manager that can take a team on or not, because he's never had the financial backing to be able to do it. So he probably did about as well as he could for as long as he could at Burnley. Will he get an opportunity at any point to spend at Everton or elsewhere? Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes. But good on him. I think he's looking after the club pretty well. So good on him there. What's everyone's thoughts for the Brentford game? Then after that is you kind of mentioned there, London, a point if Luton don't win. It reminds me a little bit of the most synonymous I can think of for the game that just went was when we beat Manchester United 1-0 in 2005 in terms of sort of like atmosphere and sort of, you know, the way we played and sort of like what it meant. And obviously that meant it was a sort of kind of similar thing in this instance, like, oh, we feel like we're safe here. You know what I mean? We're not quite safe, but we feel like we're taking a massive step towards safety. It felt that night that as well in 2005, we've made a massive step here towards finishing fourth at that time. And sure enough, we did not long after. But the game after that followed a few days later. We had Birmingham City at home and we were knackered, absolutely knackered. We ground out a very valuable 1-1 draw. It might be similar on Saturday. I mean, you can freshen it up a little bit here and there. But, you'd have to take that, really, I guess, wouldn't you? If it's a draw on Saturday and they limp to it, but just grind away a little and get a draw, particularly if Luton lose. Yeah, that'd be quite brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if they don't, we lost at Fulham after that. And then Luton away would be the corresponding game. So let's not let's not go that route.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, as you mentioned earlier, Lyndon, they've pretty much got to win 3 out of 4 games, haven't they? And ideally, one of them would be the home game against us. Yeah. Out of four, Brentford at home. It was interesting. I saw Dyche's press conference there, and he referenced Thomas Frank has been a sort of similar manager who mixes that direct style. They've got some good players and they've obviously had a poor season. We've spoken about the fact that there's parallels with ourselves having Abimeka kind of their main number nine missing for large portions of the season, albeit for different reasons. They're a good side and certainly after these last two results, a point isn't a bad result. A win to keep that momentum going, obviously, would be the weapon of choice, wouldn't it? And to potentially, put everything to bed going into that away game at Kenilworth Road. But it's a hell of an ask for Luton now. They've got an away game with West Ham after us, and then they play. Who have they got? Fulham at home. Two sides who might be still in the mix, but might also be a bit checked out. West Ham seem to be in a bit of a bad place, don't they? At least I'm talking about their games far too much. I don't have to do that as much now.
Exactly.
That's the beauty of this week, isn't it? We don't have to spend too long going into the permutations, because it was in our hands, but it still felt like it might just be snatched out of it. Now it's very much the case that we're in control of our own destiny. And you'd think that in this next run of games, there's at least some points to be won just to make that a little bit more comfortable. Last night has just really given us that extra bit of breathing room, which we didn't account for, did we? If Andy's got his chart out, that one isn't in there, is it? Yeah, that's three bonus points in that respect.
Well, Luton Town, they need 9 points essentially now, wouldn't they, to overtake us because of the goal difference? So they're eight behind us. So are they really going to win three of the last four games?
But that's them winning three times and us obviously not picking up anything.
Exactly.
That's the double side of it, isn't it?
And even then, Nottingham Forest are between us as well. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's another team to counter for there too. So you don't want to sort of, you know, start thinking, oh, we're safe when we're still a bit of work to be done. But yeah, with all laws of probability, I just can't see Luton going to. I think Wolves, having lost that last night, they'll want to make amends for that. I imagine he seems to be. I quite like that Gabby O'Neill, the way he gets his team going. You know what I mean? I think he'll have them ready for that game. I think they'll want to prove a point with that game. And that'll be West Ham's last home game of the season, I think. So I hope you'd like to think that. Probably David Moyes' last game at West Ham too. So
I was going to say, yeah.
The players are playing for him, then they might want to at least give him a little bit of a send. You know what I mean? So it's a tough ask for Luton to go.
And they're in the mix as well, aren't they, for Europe? Yeah. They have got something to play for. Fulham probably haven't. By the looks of it, but West Ham are only 2 points behind Newcastle.
Yeah, that's it. And it kind of makes like the game against Luton Town in a way a little bit easier for us, and that they have to go and beat us. You know what I mean? I just kind of feel that might suit us a bit better, and that we can kind of sit in and sort of probably be effective on set pieces and that sort of, you know what I mean? So yeah, and then we've got the ace card of Sheffield United at home, really, if all else, you know what I mean? So reality is, the way we got it now, I'd be very, very, very surprised if we got relegated from here. So don't want to say the job's done, but yeah, I'd be very, very happy if we got it done and did get the job done on Saturday. That would be absolutely terrific.
Would indeed. Well, there you go, Blues, one of our more waffly podcasts. Emotions are all over the place, really. Time to go back to watching the goals and replays and highlights and interviews all over again. Truly one to savour. Cheers to Adam, to Paul, and to Andy, who had to dip out early for work-related commitments. We'll be back next week to talk about the Brentford clash. But until then, as always, thanks so much for listening, Blues. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your week. Up the Toffees.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.